Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carling, the world's only court-qualified expert on vaccine-induced diseases. Dr. Rebecca Carling.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. One of your most important weapons in fighting the war on truth being waged against the people by the mainstream media. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BBS Radio, its staff or management, but represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced diseases, please go to the www.drcarling.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I transformed from a trauma surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. Make sure you sign up for the updates on my site as I send out important information you need to know to my list whenever the list is working. I do consults for people and pets with autoimmune diseases, seizures, or cancer, and teach you how to reverse these conditions with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and create your individual protocols based solely on history alone. You do not need to travel to North Carolina to see me in person. Please call me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week to learn how I do consults. My phone number is also on my website. I ask you to consider the information I share with you using your own innate intelligence, the common sense you were all given by your Creator. Do not believe anything I tell you. Check things out for yourself. For we have been lied to about everything, and each person must develop the ability to discern the truth for themselves if we are extricating ourselves from the matrix of darkness that has evolved because we sat by and did nothing, especially with the legion of disinformers out there. My guests and I love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in. You can use your first name only if you like, and all shows are archived. The numbers to call in are listed on the bbsradio.com website, Station 2, and include the following: toll-free USA and Canada, 888-228-4494, toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. Every week I will answer the question, What's Ailing America, with a different response, as well as share the good news as to what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet, for awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware that we've been lied to about everything, especially the fact that vaccines are good, when they are actually inoculations with disease and thus are the true weapons of mass destruction, together we will be able to stop this holocaust on the health of people and pets. That truth, when put on top of the mountain of lies upon which this country is built, will cause the entire mountain of lies to crumble. And after 10 years of waiting to find somebody to help me prove that truth, I could not be more pleased to introduce you to Dr. Andrew Mauldin, a physician from Canada, who's actually announced on my radio show yesterday that he's also running for Prime Minister. And he's going to answer the question, What's Ailing America, with his documentation that vaccines are causing brain damage, many vascular strokes, and thus are the true weapons of mass destruction, as I've been saying for 10 years. And these strokes are not limited to the brain, but can occur in any organ. And it is such a wonderful thing to finally find someone else who not only knows what I know, but can document it. So welcome to the show, Dr. Mauldin.
Thank you very much, Dr. Carling. Nice to be here.
And please give your background to our listeners so they can be just as impressed as I am.
Well, at this point, the only person that's impressed is my mother. But So my background is pretty eclectic. I did a bachelor's degree in biological psychology, graduated valedictorian, went on to a master's degree in child development. My master's thesis was in developmental neuropsychology and language development in children. Went on to a PhD in clinical neuropsychology with a subspecialization in cognitive neuroscience. My PhD thesis was in the functional brain imaging area, and my comprehensives were on acquired brain injuries and post-concussion syndrome. After that, I went on to medical school. I hadn't had enough education for some reason. I realized the brain disorders I was seeing up to the PhD in my clinical work at that point. I still didn't know what was going on in the brains of the patients I was seeing, so medicine became the next road I went into, and after that, I went into residency training looking at neuropsychiatry. And for the last several years, shortly after going to medical school, it became very clear to me with my background training that I could see in the individuals before me, the patients, the brain injury, and I realized that this was something was happening after vaccinations. So over the past several years, I've spent much of my free time and even my medical training time researching independently and working hard to try to figure out what was going on, and I'm pleased to say that I have achieved that end.
And before we get going into the meat of your information, if you could please give out your website to the listeners and also the information about your upcoming book.
Wonderful. Our website is www.amassnetwork.com. That's spelled AMASSnetwork.com. We will be releasing much of the information we will be over the upcoming months and several months, actually, of what we're doing and what's happening with our various activities and bringing this information we now have to the medical legal community as well as to the international scientific community. And so that's one website. The other website is www.imassnetwork.com. And the book which we'll be releasing in the new year is called Tolerance Lost, How Vaccines Have Caused Brain Damage, Stroke, and Chronic Illness, amongst many other diseases which we can now see, show, and document for all.
And people can pre-order that book, correct, and start getting access to the meat of your information?
Yes, actually, there's two things we'll have immediately available. Although we won't be prepared to release the entire book until the new year, some of our stuff is going to be released to the vaccine injury courts in the upcoming months. We're presenting at the World Congress of Vaccinology in Guangzhou, China, December of this year, to the international vaccine community, the things that we have discovered and the sad reality of what we now face, both of what has happened in the past as well as where we must go now in the future. So those pieces will come out in the new year after we've finished the things we're currently working on. However, if people do pre-order the book, we will send them immediately information that provides a substance to the meat of what we have and our ability now to document proof causation for vaccine-induced brain injury, including autism, sudden death, and a variety of other neurodevelopmental disorders. It's all secondary to a vaccination.
And I do look forward to accompanying you into the lion's den with all the vaccinologists to basically make them face the fact of what they've done in China in December. So please do share with the listeners, how did you come to start investigating vaccines as the cause of brain damage?
Well, I wasn't actually looking for anything relative to vaccines. In fact, even coming out of medical school, I had barely any training relative to vaccines. It's not really taught of anything of concern for us. And my whole area of interest was basically brain injury, and by and large, most of my career, at least in the upper graduate level and going into medical school and thereafter, was focused more on looking into issues related to schizophrenia. And then about 6 months coming out of medical school, with the background training I had, and the neurological and neuropsychometric tests that I had learned and acquired, and the neuroanatomy and the structure of the brain and how it can be derailed and various diseases that cause functional impairments, that it became very, very clear to me, the patients I was seeing, both children as well as some of the adults, that I could actually see the neurological damage with my own eyes, and the specialized tests that I had sort of developed and acquired over the years from the eclectic training, and I realized, wow, this is brain damage, and it's happening right before my very eyes. And beyond that, the story began to emerge that not only was it brain damage before my very, very eyes, it was also directly in the histories of the patients, as well as the family histories, sort of painting a picture of this is vaccine-related. At the time it was vaccine-related, I knew immediately when I saw this that I was dealing with the microvasculature supply, blood supply to the brain, simply because some of the neurobehavioral syndromes that I was seeing, we know kind of like rules of law, like gravity in the neurodevelopmental literature. Now, physicians won't have this training. It's because of the background training I had in child development and developmental neuropsychology that it became very clear to me that these are only caused by microvascular strokes or damaged somehow to the blood supply to the brain. With that knowledge and the knowledge of the patient histories before me, I went back into the medical literature and got stuck back in the 1964 Rubella Birth Defect Evaluation Project of New York University Medical Center. And a lot of the children who were dying back then who were exposed to rubella during the big outbreak in the 1964, their brains and tissue came to autopsy, and it came going through that literature as well as through the tissue samples. It became very clear that these viruses, before they were put in vaccine needles, can actually cause damage to microvascular distributions in the brain. So that was the beginning of an aha moment that I realized at that point, well, 2 and 2 equal 4, and I'm missing the rest of the equation to not only get an idea of how this has happened and why it's happened, to break it down to the microbiology, as well as develop means that I can quantify the damage happening using the individual as their own case control, meaning showing there's no neurological damage right now. Then they get a vaccine, and then how do we measure the change from baseline to show that the neurological damage, which I now see, is happening, and sure enough, it was there for all these children in profound numbers. In autistic children, children with specific learning disabilities, children who go on to have seizure disorders, some attention deficit disorder diagnosed children, sudden infant death children, even though I did not see them, I can actually go back retrospectively now and actually show this the damage that I can now record. And the numbers are profound, and the ramifications for society are equally profound. And the fact that I do have this now, it's no longer based on scientific theory or statistical probabilities or mathematical modeling with epidemiology, say that these things are safe for everybody. The bottom line is that when you have 1 child in 6 with specific learning disabilities, 1 child in 9 with asthma, 1 in 87 with autism, 15 to 20% of the children with attention deficit disorders, and a whole slew of individuals who have autoimmune problems, problems with food intolerances, peanut butter allergies, and a whole variety of different other damage to their body in terms of diffuse diseases that we don't really have an idea today of what causes them, including problems with the gut and colitis, all these things began to emerge once the pathways were figured out physiologically for myself, that what's happening in the brain, unfortunately, appears to be happening through the rest of the body. And in the medical sciences literature, we call this a drug-induced vasculitis. Vasculitis is inflammation of blood vessels, and the key thing here is I can now see that in the real time after vaccinations for all these children. That means I have proof causation. That means I have the means to bring this to the courts of law and show how individuals who have been exposed to vaccines have had these problems.
And just to put this into layman's terms, this vasculitis is actually causing strokes at the microvascular level, correct?
That's correct. We strokes to most people are a term that's not entirely clear. A stroke basically is nothing more than a lack of oxygen to a particular tissue area. The fancy medical word we use, we call it ischemia. But the bottom line is, any organ can have lack of oxygen to it for varied reasons. When you have lack of oxygen to your heart, we call it a heart attack. And the pain you receive is from the lack of oxygen and the mediators released by the cells. The tissue is being starved. They start to fall apart, and they release chemicals which cause pain. The same thing can happen to the gut. To the gut, we call it another fancy medical word. We call it mesenteric ischemia. And ischemia is just another fancy word we say that, by and large, there's not enough oxygen to the tissue. Unfortunately, the brain doesn't have any pain receptors. You can actually, when you do neurosurgical procedures, stick your hand in the brain and the person won't feel a thing. So when this is happening up there, the individual has no sense whatsoever that this is going on. But the because this is at the small blood vessels, the very end blood vessels, we call those capillaries. That's happening at these smaller channels. But there's certain areas of the brain at different times in development that are more susceptible to blockages of blood supply to these areas than others. And so the behavioral syndromes we see in people emerging down the road, whether it's problems with sensory perception, whether it's problems with the language production, whether it's problems with repetitive behaviors, or certain savant skills where individuals can remember things very, very profoundly and remember their location and way to map themselves throughout a geographical map. Some skills can be enhanced. Some skills can be impaired, but the bottom line is that the behavioral disturbances, the disturbances in the way the person thinks and processes information, the degree of impairment and the nature of the impairment is a function of what areas, at what time, to what degree these microvascular areas are being blocked. But the key thing is that when this is happening within hours to days after vaccination, and an individual was not diagnosed with autism until a year or so later, the bottom line is that the neurological damage that happened after vaccination I can now see and record and show that was not there before the vaccine. And these children went on to have these developments, if not immediately, years later, of these problems with cognition.
And one of the things that you've taught me in our many discussions is that the areas of the body that are most sensitive to this assault are what are called watershed areas throughout the body, which is areas that do not have collateral circulation, and these areas can occur throughout the body, correct?
That's correct. So the process that's actually leading to this problem in response to the vaccines, it's not the bugs in the vaccines that are causing the problem. This is based on, the whole vaccine model is based on something called Louis Pasteur's germ theory. And Louis Pasteur, people are probably familiar with his name. The entire Western medicine model, including the entire vaccine industry, is based on the germ theory. And it's called a theory because it basically is theoretical. Theoretically, we have modeled our entire approach to Western medicine, whether it's pharmaceuticals or vaccines, under the hypothesis that an individual has disease, no matter what the disease is, as a function of their body being invaded by some foreign entity, whether it's a bacteria, a virus, a parasite, a fungus. And with that idea, then we developed various ways to go fight this battle. So we developed antibiotics and we to go fight these bugs because germs cause disease. And we developed vaccines to prevent disease because we developed vaccines which are weakened versions of these bugs to create an immune system response, a white blood cell response, that if the individual in the future, after being vaccinated, ever sees this bug again, then their memory of having seen it before in a weakened form from the vaccines will lead to a very quick immune response. The white blood cells will go attack this immediately, person will not get diseased. Well, unfortunately, after figuring this out, and I say figuring it out because we can now see it with our own eyes, the sad reality is we've made a huge blunder and leap of logic in the whole approach to the vaccine industry, which has been wrong since the very get-go of Edward Jenner, who started this whole process off with smallpox vaccine, is that in reality, it's not actually the bug, by and large, that's been causing the problems, at least for all these neurodevelopmental disorders that we now see emerging after the vaccine industry has gotten these children up to almost 48 shots by the time they're 5 years of age. We've actually manufactured the vaccines to increase the immunological response. By that, I mean increasing the white blood cell response and the antibody response to the vaccines, because we thought that that's protective. So if you increase the white blood cell response, if we do things to the vaccines that we put in the needles, like adding aluminum or liposomes or some other things that have recently been used for the military called squalene, that these sort of adjuvants would enhance the immunological response and provide greater protection. Well, the sad reality here is where the whole system we now know is flawed, and society will find this out soon enough, is that the actual enhanced immunological response in these ways too much too soon is what's actually causing the disease, at least from the brain damage that's now blocking off the blood vessels that I can now see and record and demonstrate for all.
In fact, amazingly, in one of our discussions we've had, you were even telling me about the similarities with some of the psychiatric conditions and how they're actually related to this process, and the fact that autism and schizophrenia in children was actually correlated at one point. So that was a mind blower to me, is that you're actually proving that some of the psychiatric illnesses are due to the same process.
That's correct, because the first few cases that I had back in 2001, which led me down to this sort of process, and again, I didn't go down to this route and get to these answers by design. It's simply as a clinician with a background knowledge base, and you see things that you can make sense of from a particular point of view, you can then look in between and see what information you're missing and go back in the literature. Now, I was initially searching after schizophrenia based on a clinical history that I had of a few patients and the stuff I was seeing happening in the neurological exam. And then the same history was coming up with various autistic children that I was seeing, and those points together, again, I saw the same neurological problems in these children. Now, you look back in the history of labeling of diseases and disorders in the psychiatric literature, basically the psychiatric literature labels the disorders on the basis of symptoms. In fact, originally, the journal that was out initially was called the Journal of Childhood Schizophrenia and Autism. Now, schizophrenia differs from autism in fundamental ways. In particular, the language skills remain intact, and the schizophrenic patients have delusions and hallucinations, more times than not auditory in nature. However, if you look at this problem physiologically, it depends on when in development the brain is hit in terms of the physiological process we now know is going on. And with that knowledge, knowing what the microvasculature trees, the small blood vessels are to different areas of the brain, it depends when the brain is hit with the disease process itself. Again, these processes are what's causing the behavioral manifestations, which we call symptoms in psychiatry like schizophrenia or autism or learning disabilities or sudden infant death or attention deficit disorder. And so when I recognize that, it really quite clearly, physiologically in many ways, because schizophrenia is also something that's not completely understood in terms of what causes it, as was most if not all of the neuropsychiatric illnesses, it was really profound to recognize that the same physiological process that happens in one is similar in its nature to what's happening to the other ones. And just the degree to which we label things with the symptoms we see, the behavioral manifestations that we can all recognize with our own eyes, and the variability in terms of the severity of the illness or deficits the individual has, from very mild to clinically insignificant to moderate to severe, it all exists on a continuum. And the continuum is in partly a function of the timing of the process happening within the brain. And this is not to say that vaccines cause schizophrenia. It's the process that emerges from the body's response to foreign invaders, whether they're antigens or infectious diseases. Any infectious disease can do it. Any vaccine can particularly do it. The problem is when the immune system has a hyper response to these things, you can achieve that by repeat vaccinations. You can achieve this by becoming intolerant to a foreign antigen by prior exposure and by other variables that I won't go into. And once the immune system is in this state, the next exposure to this problem can lead to the neuropsychiatric disorders, which we classify, which now appear to exist on a continuum of a common physiological process causing them all.
And I just want to say I'm hoping that we'll get a call from veterinarian Dr. Patricia Jordan, so I'll ask the board up to please let us know if we get any callers on the line. Make sure you state it loud so that we hear it, because I'm hoping she will interject some of the pet correlations, because this is the biggest epidemic the world has ever known, folks, and this is what Dr. Mulvin is going to prove with his information. In fact, is it not true, Dr. Mulvin, that there's also many other things that we would never even think of being related to this process, such as obesity and violence, as Dr. Coulter talked about in his book, Vaccination, Social Violence, and Criminality. As we were discussing earlier, there's actually a nucleus within the hypothalamus that helps to control those behaviors, and those areas being injured by this mini-stroke process can also be causing certain things that we would never even think of in terms of being caused by a vaccination.
It's very right, actually. It's a very humbling position to be in, especially when you can now record it and show it what's actually going on in terms of clinical skills. Everybody can see it for themselves now with the ways we've enhanced the diagnostics to see it emerging. But then when you realize what's happening in the physiology, which is going to be when it becomes to full fruition, when we present everything in China this year, the sad reality is that the process itself can affect many different areas. And it's kind of the areas that it affects in the brain. There are some certain commonalities that can be predictable based on the timing of the insult that the damage happens in neurodevelopment, whether it's in the first months or first year or first couple years. Unfortunately, in the first couple of years of child development, there's areas in the brain stem, the very base of the brain, which controls all the automatic functions of the body, meaning your heart rate and the automatic respiration centers, your central respiratory drive. some of these areas are in areas that only have singular microvascular distributions to those areas. So if you block off those areas, it's kind of like blocking off the driveway to your house. And once that driveway is blocked, there's no other driveways to bring in the cars for the groceries and food and water and oxygen for the occupants of the house. So those areas, when they get blocked, the person loses the central drive for respiration and they stop breathing. We call it sudden instant death. Unfortunately, in the process that leads to this problem, the inflammation of the small blood vessels that occurs, the blockages of the very small blood vessels as well, the problems that emerge in this state can also lead to other problems because the process can also launch parts of the blood clotting cascade within the blood supply, and you end up eating up all of the factors that you require to form clots, and some of these people can develop what we call thrombocytopenia, low platelets, as well as other problems that lead to difficulty with clotting. And these are all also adverse side effects, which are part of the process. But it is a process that can lead to many different disorders and diseases, and to a certain extent, it's probably not too far a stretch of the truth that a similar process now in physiology is involved in various things like Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease, now that we see that the germ theory is not entirely 100% correct. And these are called hypersensitivity responses, and now have a good feel on how these responses have been causing many diseases that we call psychiatric and neuropsychiatric in particular.
Do we have a caller on the line?
Yes, I'm here, Dr. Corley.
Hello, thank you for calling in, Dr. Jordan.
Yes, I needed to speak to Dr. Molden again.
Yes, and please do share with our listeners how you can see this process also occurring in pets as well, because you've been a guest on my show many times, and you've been documenting vaccine injuries for a long time, and I know that you're as excited as I am to find the person who's now going to be able to prove what's happening at the microvascular level.
Yes, and what I was talking to Dr. Molden about when I had a chance to meet him in Connecticut a few weeks ago was something that's really not well understood at all in veterinary medicine, but something that he, when I explained to him some of the things that we were seeing, mainly because I've had a lot of training through Dr. Richard Pitcairn, who's a homeopathic veterinarian, that we see a lot of behavioral problems in the dogs and cats also that came up following vaccination. Just to name a few, I can tell you that, like, I'm working currently on a dog that started noticing and then obsessing and barking at shadows post-vaccination, and dogs that would do things like guard the kitchen and not let the people come in there. And some of these behaviors would persist for maybe a week to 10 days. Some of them would never go away unless you started to try to work on the patient. And of course, there's absolutely no cure for this that I found in Western medicine at all, because they have the completely wrong paradigm that they're working with. But we were able to get some resolution on these using the energetic medicine of homeopathy. But I've seen so many things now that I can trace back to the ischemia process that Dr. Molden's describing that result in these behavioral changes. And just like when Dr. Carley, when you treated that patient that had been bit by a dog that had been vaccinated and actually started barking, now we understand how rabies even is transferred. And I'm really worried, because as veterinarians, we have to take those rabies vaccines. And I know that with the dogs, some of the behaviors that have come up post-vaccination with them is fear of thunder, fear of the firecrackers, and this getting worse and worse and worse as the dog ages. Fear of strangers or distrust, rabies and distemper vaccine. I guess any of the vaccines could essentially do it. So, you know, I just feel like this is finally where we're at, where we're being able to understand that this definitely is coming as a sequelae to post-vaccine administration.
And it's very interesting as well, because even to look at the cross species data, both in the tissue as well as in some of the behavioral features, that even at the tissue level, and we now have that information as well, that the same process is happening in the children, and even adults who experience difficulties after vaccinations, whether they're neurobehavioral, the way they think of process information, or the way that they process sensory information, the pathological process in the physiology is the same. However, because of the differences in terms of cognitive abilities between primates and humans in particular and animals, the behavioral symptoms we see will be some very clear, distinct differences. However, animals and pets have microvascular problems as well. In fact, even all the doctors of veterinary medicine, including the dermatologists and histopathologists, people look at tissue, can clearly see the same process under the skin at the injection site that we now see going along with the problem with the vaccines, which unfortunately the CDC and the Advisory Council on Immunizations Practice are well aware. In fact, the word out is when an individual has an arthritis reaction, which is this ischemic process happening under the skin at the injection site, where it causes pain and swelling and can be protracted and even cause gangrene. The gangrene emerges because there's no oxygen to the tissue. Well, that whole process is actually happening systemically through the body, and the CDC's advisory council to all of the physicians who are giving these vaccines are out that if you receive an arthritis reaction, that's a complete 100% contraindication to these people ever receiving that vaccine within the next 10 years because it could kill them. Now, that information is not freely available to parents or doctors, and that means there's no informed consent because some of the patients I've seen and assessed who have gone down and died of sudden infant death or developed serious neurobehavioral disorders afterwards, they had that contraindication after a DTP shot 2 or 3, and so the warnings were there that this person can never see this again, but because this information was not provided to the family members or the physicians giving it to the family members and it wasn't in the product safety monographs, that what happened in the next shot was completely avoidable based on the warning signs. But I have to assume that somebody must have thought that if that information is freely available to all the parents, that even those parents out there who would conscientiously object to vaccination for religious grounds or otherwise, that if you give them the information that allows them to have a medical, legitimate medical excuse not to vaccinate their children, then many would choose not to have them vaccinated even if this arthritis reaction was never seen before. So somebody made the determination, I'll have to assume, and I make that assumptively, that somebody knew better, that we'll just sort of hide that information from you and not discuss it. That's a very profound piece of information to have. And physiologically, what's happening to many individuals, it was completely predictable, as it has been seen in the veterinarian cases as well, which the doctors in veterinary medicine recognize that each subsequent shot, an individual who's evidencing this problem, the damage and the adverse response to the vaccine becomes worse and worse and worse.
What's happening, what I've seen in the practice that I just left, I've seen them do everything when they come in. First of all, across the board, veterinarians are not acknowledging. They are not recognizing anything that goes on with these vaccines. They will not record it, and they are not reporting it. I had so many adverse reactions in 2 weeks ago. I had so many dogs dying, actually. And all the cases clearly pointed towards, you know, it was the vaccine-induced. And I spent 2.5 weeks trying to get through to the people at the USDA and the FDA concerning these vaccines, particularly with the Fort Dodge vaccines. And the veterinarian that I work for, he knew that that particular vaccine was very highly adverse reaction associated, and that's exactly why they used it, because they have more adverse vaccine reactions to then also get more money for to treat the animal, which I think is abhorrent to the profession. And what they're doing is giving them Benadryl, telling them to take aspirin. I even saw a dog that came in status epilepticus, who was already flat out in seizures that Valium couldn't stop. And while this dog was in here, which to me, they weren't taking histories. You know, did these seizures start once they had a vaccine? Because it certainly seems like there's an epidemic of vaccine adverse reactions, and it seems like the only one that's recognizing them in that practice that I was at was myself. And this particular dog had vaccine seizures, and even under the position of being in status epilepticus and having to receive pentobarbital to essentially render him unconscious, this doctor administered a full split.
Yeah, the same problem happens in humans as well, infants and children. There's no difference. Now, the listeners may not really truly understand what a seizure is and how it's different from epilepsy. Seizure, the brain is like an electrical engine, and the heart itself is also like an electrical engine. And when you block oxygen supply, by example, to the heart, you can cause scar tissue, tissue that died a little bit because it did not have oxygen to sustain itself for a while. And that scarification to the electrical musculature of the heart can then become a source of erratic electrical discharge. And then we call that irregular rhythms or arrhythmias in cardiology for heart problems. But the brain is no different. The brain is an electrical chemical engine, and when you either have a significant trauma, if you've been hit in the head, you can cause scarification. If you have some inflammatory process, you can cause scarification. But more specifically, if you have lack of oxygen, it causes scarification. And even almost adults who end up having a very severe stroke, most of them go on having an increased risk and many of them develop seizure disorders within the upcoming year, because the scarification tissue becomes a source of erratic electrical discharge, which causes seizures. So in the animals, as well as in the children and the infants who go into these seizure-type situations after vaccinations, the vaccination cannot cause seizures. It cannot cause any of these things, actually. It's not that the vaccine or a needle or a bug or a germ or anything for that matter that actually causes these syndromes and symptoms we see. That describing it with words as a seizure, like we were explaining what's going on, is meaningless. Saying that the child died of sudden death, you might as well say the child died of eating cornflakes, because it tells you nothing in terms of the physiology what caused the problem. The bottom line is this. You are having lack of oxygen to tissue areas, which is leading to oxygen deficits, causing tissue damage, and those tissue damage areas can lead to the seizure disorders and the problems you see. Sadly, for the children and the infants, especially historically for autistic children, there's an area in the brain, the thalamus, that actually is a part in the middle part of the brain that kind of acts like the central relay station for processing all sensory information, whether it's like touch, pain, vibration sense, or hearing, or any one of the senses that you have. The thalamus is the relay station before anything goes up to conscious awareness. But unfortunately, when you block off the small blood vessels to the thalamus, here's a very profound thing that happens. You can lead to something that we call neurology, called a thalamic pain syndrome. Fancy words, which basically means that when the person before this damage happened to the small blood supply to the thalamus, when you touch their skin, it would be felt by the brain as being pleasurable, light touch. But after a thalamic stroke in these microvessel trees, light touch to the skin becomes painful to the brain of these individuals. Now imagine this. We always thought that these autistic children, they're not consolable, they don't like being hugged, they go limp when you try and hug them, that they had some sort of social problem, that they didn't like to be close to their mothers, they didn't have some bonding attachment, or they didn't want to be loved. But in reality, as it turns out, when you look at how these children interact with the world, when this is going on, they arch their backs off the ground, they're screaming inconsolably, their feet evert out, they walk on their toes, they take their clothes off because they, for some reason, we think this is deviance. But actually, all these things are not just painful. If not painful, they're noxious, not pleasant to the brain, and the brain can't turn it off. When the relays in the thalamus go, all this sensory information comes flying up to the brain. They have to pay attention to it all at once. And so that children who are preverbal, infants who don't know how to speak, or for that matter, they're learning what the experience of life is on this planet, to them, they don't realize that this is not something common to us all, and the experience of pain is profound, and they don't have any words for it, but they bicycle their legs. They scream uncontrollably. They don't like to be hugged. They don't like having things touching their skin. And then later on, the brain downregulates, and then it has these various sensory aversions that individuals show these various sensory problems because the system has been derailed. All problems with stroke.
And I just want to bring home to the listeners again, because someone called me today after hearing yesterday's show, don't get confused when Dr. Mulden says it's not from the vaccines. What he's saying is that it's not the viruses being injected that's the problem. It's the immune response to those things. And I'm sure that this is also possibly involved with the pets, Dr. Jordan, that are afraid of their own shadow, that are scared by firecrackers or lightning. They could possibly be having things happening in their brainstem or cortex, whatever, that's damaging them in similar ways, that's making them have these behavioral changes as well. But not only that, I had a case myself here in North Carolina, a woman that had a dog get a rabies vaccine, and the nails in the end of the paw actually started becoming gangrenous. And now I realize from Dr. Mulden's work that this is also like a microvascular stroke situation in the quick of the nail. These, mini strokes can happen anywhere. So it's just amazing to realize the huge amount, as I've always said, that inoculations are causing the biggest epidemic the world has ever known. Dr. Molden is now proving this. And I know as well, Dr. Jordan, that you've also been documenting the legions of cancers being caused at the site of inoculation, and that's one reason why your veterinary clinic basically asked you to, you know, go someplace else. Dr. Molden was explaining to me just today about the fact that these adjuvants, especially aluminum and the liposomes and other things that they're injecting into the body with the viruses, is basically creating a depot situation where you're having a constant release of the vaccines to the body. It's like you're getting stung by a bee, you know, every day, as he was putting it. And that helps you understand how these immune assaults can just continue on for a long time after the initial assault occurs. And I know you've actually found aluminum depositions right at the site. Isn't that true, Dr. Jordan, when you've excised the tumors?
Yes, they found that's what they call the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast is that they're finding that blue-gray aluminum foreign body at the site. But it travels also. The cancers don't have to be at the site of injection. They can even be at other places that now, you know, from being also trained in acupuncture, we're looking at these sites where these cancers come out at. And it doesn't matter what they turn out to be. The biopsy is always going to be something reflective of the immune cell. At some point, the immune system is becoming, the growth is not able to be turned off, and it becomes cancerous. Now, back to the nail that you were describing, they've even discussed this on the Veterinary Information Network, but it just seemed like every single case that I get, well, first of all, now we're having an epidemic of these dogs getting nail problems. I guess the vets keep saying, oh, they're getting them caught in the porches on the decks, and that's not true. These are coming up as what the term is called lupoid, like lupus. Oncodystrophy means the nail's not growing properly. It's a vascular event that's causing it, just like Dr. Molden was describing. I had to also, you know, keep sitting on my hands because Purina gave a seminar just this past Sunday up in Boston. And they were talking about inflammatory bowel disease, and they're talking about all these different problems, and every single one of them, when they say what causes it, none of these lecturers ever mention vaccines, but they all mention that it's been found to be suspected to be immune-mediated. So I'm like, and again, the immune mediation is coming because of this relentless, especially in the state of Massachusetts. Year after year after year, these dogs are getting assaulted with all of these vaccines, and not just the distemper wombo combo jumbo combination. They're doing Bordetella, they're doing rabies, and they're also doing the Lyme's vaccine. They're doing very inflammatory whole Bactrin vaccines. They're doing them all with adjuvants. I see these dogs' eyes drying up in their sockets. They've got, you know, immune-mediated problems all over their body, so that by the time they're 5 or 7 years of age, they're essentially, you know, done. And then they go to adrenal exhaustion, where their immune system can't even make a response at all. And I see now where the physiology can explain post-vaccination that it's causing all of this pathology.
Exactly. So by analogy, for the listeners to understand, the aluminum has been added to the vaccines. Now, everyone made a big fuss about mercury. Unfortunately, mercury is not where it's at in any way. And then recently we made a big fuss about mitochondria. Now, the mitochondria are kind of like the lungs for each of the cells. The mitochondria can be derailed as a function of the vaccination, so it's not something that pre-existed. It's something that comes after the fact. In fact, we actually now know that as the viruses, which are parasites, inject themselves into the cells, they cause derailments of the mitochondria. So after a person develops autism from vaccines, we say, oh, there was a pre-existing mitochondrial disorder, which is not true. In fact, we know that the virus is causing it.
Right.
That's point one. Point two is that the aluminum has been added to the vaccines primarily to enhance the immunological response. Now, I can't say this more clearly again. It's the enhanced immunological response that is causing the problem for these microvascular blockages. Now, aluminum, by example, if anyone has an aquarium at home and they're planning to go away for a couple of weeks, you can go to the fish stores and buy a block for a two-week supply of food. You drop the block into the fish tank, it slowly dissolves and lets out the food pellets over a period of 2 weeks. aluminum achieves the same effect, but not over 2 weeks, for a year to 2 years. So basically what happens here is the individual can get the first injection of the vaccine in their body, complex with aluminum, and the injection at the site, it kind of acts like the seeds for a dandelion. Once it's out of the skin, it basically goes flying everywhere. It's a random thing, it can go anywhere it wants, and it sort of like likes to sit down in smooth muscle. Unfortunately, lining all the small blood vessels in the body, the basement membranes of those, are smooth muscle. So where a person feels pain and hotness and redness at the site of injection, that's because the immune system is coming in there at the site saying this is something foreign. But when the aluminum goes throughout all the body, complex with the foreign antigens, and now these children now have 150 different foreign antigens injected in their body by the time they're 5 years of age, and up to 47 different vaccinations by the time they're five, beginning with minutes of birth. These antigens themselves are what's, they're kind of like little bees. The little bees are different for each different bug we inject into the individual, and each bee itself can have several different antigenic determinants that the body's immune system responds to. These things are now scattered throughout the body. Now, you know that if you get injected, but you get bit by a bee and you have an allergic reaction to it, we say, okay, this person is now allergic to bee stings. Stay away from bee stings, you're allergic to it. And if you have penicillin, we say, okay, you're now allergic to penicillin, you can never have penicillin again. But by effect, what we have done with these vaccines by complexing them with aluminum, where they stay in a depot effect in the body and slowly released over the upcoming years, when your body becomes intolerant, it may not be at the time of injection, it could be a month or several months thereafter, even a year after, then all of a sudden, from inside your body, you've been bit by the bee again, and then all of a sudden your immune system says, I can't see this anymore, I'm allergic to it. But unfortunately, you cannot turn the beehive off, we've injected it in your body, and then physiologically through your whole body, you're having this process going on, which is causing all these chronic diseases, and particularly exacerbating the neurodevelopmental disorders, which we now see in epidemic formats. 1 in 6 with specific learning disabilities, 15-20% of kids with ADHD, 1 in 9 with asthma, 1-2% with sudden infant death, and again, up to 1 in 80 with autism. It used to be 1 child in 10,000 before the multi-vaccines came along online. This is atrocious. It's sad that we can now see it, but the good thing is that we have to now prove it in court, and we've emerged into an organization where we're going to do exactly that, like that, and we're going to take every case we have and bring it to courts, because the only way these people will stop doing what they're doing is hit them in their pocketbook. We're not angry. We don't have any animosity, but the bottom line, this is a corporate entity we're going up against. It is a Goliath. It is an army of Goliaths, and they're not going to like to hear what we have to say and what we have to show. But the only way it'll be shown, proven that we're wrong, is if the judge and the lawyers and the families and everyone else do not believe what's before their very eyes. Because we made it that simple. Kind of by analogy, your arm is before you right now. It's a normal arm. Then we whack it with a baseball bat or we hit it with a vaccine. And within hours after that, we can now show that the bone is broken. And this is neurological damage. It's hard neurological damage. It was before our eyes all along, and now we can see it.
And I just want to mention
ask
that
you, Dr. Moulton, about the aluminum. In 1999, the World Health Organization made a statement on record, it's actually in the book, that the aluminum hydroxide is grade 3 out of 4 of carcinogenic capability. I would like to know, since the AVMA has said the mammalian system is not different from the dogs and the cats from the humans, why the aluminum hydroxide, which is the same adjuvant that they're putting in the children's vaccines, one of the two aluminum salts, why it would not be carcinogenic in the children?
That's a very good point, and it's outside my area of knowledge or expertise, but I'm sure as society as a whole begins to get wind of the truth here, and we start seeing this coming out as we present it to both the lay and scientific communities and the judiciary system through the federal circuit courts, that these questions will be tough questions that some people are going to have to answer. And the fact that this information that I'm breaking forward now in many of the red flags were on the wall. People have been screaming murder for many a year here, and you go back in the scientific literature, we even know going back to 1903 and 1904 that the information was there to say that these things can be very detrimental. But we've so downplayed this, and you have experts out there now saying that children can take on 10,000 vaccines at a time. It's absolutely insanity, only because the body's physiological response, unfortunately, is what's causing these problems. And even the military vets who came back from the Gulf War, they were actually experimented on with a new form of adjuvant, not using aluminum, using squalene. And they didn't even know that that was actually being done to them. In fact, they found the antibodies to squalene in the military vets. They had over 800,000 people involved in the two Gulf Wars. A quarter of a million of them are sick with chronic illness. 40,000 have died, and even individuals who are not deployed overseas have the same problems. A hair falls out, big lesions on the skin, various diffuse cognitive problems. Now, cognitive is a fancy word for processing of information. All your information processing skills is in the brain. These are not big strokes where you lose, you can't speak and you lose half the side of your body. These are microvascular strokes. So the main pipes remain open, but there's certain distributions in the brain where critical functions for processing information, for sustaining attention, for directing attention, for laying down new memories, for executive function of sequencing things, organizing things, abstracting things, planning things, all these different functions that we take for granted can be derailed in multiple individual formats if the individual has a depression. We call it, they say they have differences in their mood, or their affect, or their ability to think and remember and multitask. All these problems are known adverse effects from microvascular things going on in the brain, and some of the behavioral syndromes I see, there's only one way you can cause it. But beyond even that, and beyond all the nuances of the microbiology and chemistry, the simple fact is this, and this is what's going to be the shot that's going to be heard around the world. The bottom line is we now show neurologically intact individuals before vaccination, and now we show the neurological damage within hours to days after vaccination. These people either die or they go on to develop autism or learning disabilities, and it's profound when you see it yourself with your own eyes, and I can now show that to the world. And we're intent on stopping this this mass damage to humanity.
It's murder. It's murder.
And
it has to take longer,
Jordan, that as we've discussed before, as it turns out, there's many more veterinarians with a conscience than there are white coats, and I know that you're going to be sharing Dr. Molden's information with them and help stop this Holocaust in the pets as well. And since I'm the conspiracy realist in the group, I will say it's very obvious that there's an intent here. There's no question that they're actually trying to cause cancer. They have a special virus cancer program where they've developing viruses to cause cancer since the 1960s, and I have documents of that. But I also want to mention, thanks to Patrick Jordan, we have that NATO book where they actually talk about the fact that they know that aluminum also causes IgE production, which is the cause of the type 1 hypersensitivity reactions where you're going into anaphylactic shock. And in regards to squalene, I was investigating that today, and it turns out that squalene is an intermediate metabolite in cholesterol biosynthesis. So here they're actually injecting soldiers with an adjuvant that's actually something that they have in their body, i.e. cholesterol. So now they're going to develop antibodies to cholesterol. So there's no question that they are intentionally creating disease. And I will state that the rest of you don't have to. But the bottom line is that thanks to Dr. Malden's research, we are going to be able to prove the damage that the vaccines are causing, and that is how we're going to stop this Holocaust. And I'm so excited. The team is definitely getting together. And we only have 3 minutes left, but if you have anything else to say, Dr. Jordan, and then we'll close with Dr. Malden.
Yes, I would like to say that I'm as a veterinarian, I recognize when I watch the show, The Medicated Child, it makes me nauseous. I could almost vomit when I was realizing that those children are damaged because of a government-mandated program called vaccination. And the other thing that was just as depressing was the fact that they're not going to be made better by the pharmaceutical corporations with their drugs. So over-vaccinated and over-medicated does not return health in any way. Maybe Dr. Molden can speak about that, about all the pharmaceutical drugs that they're given to these children. Are they going to find any hope with that?
Yeah, there's no hope. You cannot put out a fire unless you know how it's fueled. So sometimes you'll add water to an electrical fire and you cause more harm than good. It's the state that they're in with the pharmaceuticals. But keep in mind, pharmaceuticals. In Canada, we have 23,000 deaths a year chalked up to the adverse effects of pharmaceuticals. That's not including the vaccines. In the United States, there's 700,000 deaths a year adverse effects from pharmaceuticals. In all of Western medicine, we now recognize, as published in the Journal American Medical Association, British Medical Journal, all the big medical journals, we now recognize prescription drugs as the number one cause of death, ahead of HIV, ahead of cancer, ahead of heart attack and strokes. We have a problem. The reason why we have these problems is because our medical model is wrong. And unfortunately, much of the medical establishment, whether it's organized medicine or academia or post-secondary educations or journals or regardless, has been sort of picked up and taken advantage of by the financial interests of a pharmaceutical industry which has much more money than the physicians and the physician organization bodies do. It's an unfortunate situation. We're now fighting a political social thing, not a medical mystery thing. The whole world now needs to know that I can see this conclusively, and I'll put my life and liberty on the line for it. I'll go toe-to-toe with any expert they have from the other side. I can show them with their own eyes how the vaccines have caused brain damage, and the numbers are not one child in 87 or one child in 150 like the autism stuff said. We're talking about 1 in 4, 1 in 5. They're all being hurt. And even the ones who don't show any clinical symptoms, they've been harmed. And I can now show that for the ones who've been moderately to severely harmed, but irrespective of that, the bottom line is they've all been hurt, and the numbers are something that's been around the globe, and someone's going to have to answer for that. For now, my goal is to stop the bleeding, and I have the means to do that, and it's not going to be an easy battle, but unless they can deny what they see before their very eyes, and I'll give it all the information out to the public as a whole, you can now see it for yourself, because in many ways you can see the damage in your own children once I show you what to look for.
And in fact, the pharmaceuticals themselves can also cause vasculitis, and that's something that Dr. Mulden has also been teaching me about. So we're actually out of time. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Jordan, for calling in. Listeners, please tell everybody you know to listen to the archive of this show. Dr. Mulden was also on my show yesterday on republicbroadcasting.org, and he will also be on that network again a week from this coming Saturday on my show at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2FYC. Once we spread this information to a critical mass of people, the walls of Big Pharma will come crumbling down, and that's going to put a stop to the bleeding, as Dr. Mulden said. So God bless you, Dr. Mulden, for your work. After 10 years, the white horse finally arrived with the warrior on it, which is proving what these vaccines are doing. So have a good night, folks, and get it away from your white coat, especially away from that hypodermic. Good night, everybody. See you next week.